All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, I was asking you during the break. You're a guy who's flown an awful lot in your life. And many of us have, you know, grown accustomed to no problems at all on the flight with the passengers, right?
Yeah, I've never had a problem. I've never been on a plane where there was a problem with a passenger.
You know, even if a person, you could drink all you wanted to. I guess they finally put a stop to that. They kind of control how many drinks a person can have. So about the worst, I've never seen people inebriated on flights, not unless they were that way before they got on. But many times, not just recently, Sandy, fighting on the airplane. Can you imagine? You're on a plane, and two guys go to duking it out. I mean, there's no room. There's no place.
Well, our defiant conduct vis-a-vis the flight person.
Yes.
You know.
The flight attendant.
Put your mask on. No. You know. Yeah. And just defiant. Lots. I do think that in our society, generally, there's been a big increase in sort of defiant conduct, and I think it probably comes from examples that were provided to them by public figures, encouraging defiance. You know, like encouraging a disdain for rules, and a notion that rules were illegitimate because whatever. You know, and we've sort of become a people who have decided we'll follow the laws which we think are just laws, because we've been told that by politicians at various levels, that, you know, basically there's a bunch of bad laws, we won't follow them. And to that point, segueing back to guns, I think that the people who favor AR-15s, for instance, would tell you that one of the reasons they have them is because they want to defend themselves against the imposition of bad laws. You know, I mean, it's cutting into our society to the point where we're beginning to think as a people that we can decide which laws are good ones and which ones are bad ones.
So, Sandy, that being the case, so what's different about these things could have always been, people could have always challenged those thoughts, you know, decades ago. Are people are different now? All of a sudden, or they feel more emboldened?
Well, you know,
to
we go,
do things.
There are movements. You know, I remember as a kid that people would say, "What's the longest word in the dictionary?"
And it was supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
No, that's not in the dictionary. It's anti-disestablishmentarianism. That was always the longest word.
I'm glad I never had that kind of dictionary.
Okay, but the point is, when you take that word apart, there was. A establishmentarianism, meaning that you favored the establishment. Then there was disestablishmentarianism, people who were against the establishment. And then there were anti-disestablishmentarianists who were against the people who were against the establishment. So I'm just saying that represents movements. That word represents the development of movements. The original movement was to favor the establishment. The second movement was to disfavor the establishment. That's the movement that we're facing right now, is there's a lot of disestablishmentarianism going on right now. We're heading back, hopefully we'll get back to that longest word where we'll begin to be against the disestablishmentarianists. But, you know, there's a lot about the establishment that we should be questioning. You know, I personally am worried about the part of the establishment that wants to spend $865 billion on defense.
So, Sandy, you and I can definitely, I agree with you. I'm one of those people like you who challenges things in the establishment, but we don't physically go into.
Right.
There's a big difference in what is happening now. There are people physically.
taking matters and taking law into their own hands.
Yeah.
Right.
And so that's the inherent danger with the movement today as opposed to the movement that, you know, we were talking about in the past. Let's go to Steve from Green Bay. Hey, Steven, how you doing, man? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Hey, Earl, I missed you yesterday.
Welcome
back.
But yeah, I'm glad to be back, man. Thank you.
So I was just going to make a comment on a previous caller about Mexico and specifically our military going into Mexico. And some of the facts he tried saying that, you know, Mexico is more dangerous than, you know, Iraq and Iran and the United States. That's absolutely untrue, as you told him that there's actually more murders in the United States than there is in Mexico. But also, it's this kind of, you know, information that is dangerous. And we already have a problem with the way people look at Mexico as a culture due to the rights bashing of Mexico and, you know, the border crisis. And we already have a stigma that if you're from Mexico, you must be carrying drugs on you, because that's what the right has been saying for quite some time. And it's not true, and it's dangerous. And this kind of information needs to be stopped immediately when someone says it.
All right, Stephen, thank you very much for the call as always, man. Really appreciate it. You know, Sandy.
Well, and then to just follow up on what he was saying, because you and I were talking earlier off the air. I think that my experience when I was in Mexico a year ago, I ran into people who were very much against the American government. They hated the sort of overbearing nature of their big neighbor, but they loved the American people who came down and spent money. And so they differentiated between the problem and the people. And I think that America's got a problem. We, for instance, tend to vilify the people that relate to the government that we have a problem with. So, you know, we vilify Russians when our problem is with the Russian government. We vilify Mexicans when our problem is with Mexican criminals who make up a minority. And no matter how criminal we might think Mexico is, they make up a minor minority of the population of Mexico. And so I think that's a problem we've got. We tend to vilify peoples. And we've, you know, it might go back to sort of a racial instinct we've got. We tend to vilify ethnicities. You know, we're afraid, you know, people are afraid of a black guy walking down the street because we think he's packing a gun.
Right. Let's go. David is back from Mequon. Hey, David, go ahead. You want to respond quickly?
Yes. The caller that was just previous to me, he's incorrect. It's easily verifiable to go on the United Nations website.
Hey, David, the point is, what's to be gained by, you know, vilifying that when we know we've got more than enough issues in our country ourselves amongst our own people?
Okay, so this is the problem that I think both you and maybe Sandy are having difficulties with. I am simply stating facts as far as what is going on in Mexico, and the fentanyl that's coming into the United States is coming through Mexico, and that is affecting the general population and what you're seeing with young kids overdosing and everything else. So it does have an impact. This is not vilifying. I am just trying to point out the fact that we have a crisis of where we have innocent kids that are being killed by drugs, even more than guns.
Can you explain to me?
That's a fact.
Can you explain to me why the appetite for drugs is more in this country than anywhere else? If there wasn't an appetite for drugs in our country, it wouldn't be.
And there's a lot of money to be gained.
Okay. So you can say that again. Sandy and I were talking about, you know, Colombia and Bolivia and Peru. We've seen this. Okay, this is not new. In the 80s, that's what it was.
Well, fentanyl is, you know, because of the nature of it, takes such a small quantity of fentanyl to create both a lot of money and a lot
right.
of death. It's relatively easy to move around. It's also relatively easy to make.
Right.
And so I'm confident that all the money that's to be made in it will cause it to be made someplace. It is true that a great deal of it is being made in Mexico now. It was being sourced in China up before that. And you know, it's being sold by people in the United States to people in the
yes.
United States, so that there is a network of drug traffickers in the United States who might be getting their supply from Mexico, but are, you know, the criminal conduct of trafficking is occurring here. You know, it's a problem. And I think it's certainly useful to recognize the problem. The question is how we recognize it, and whether the recognition of it, the language we use, ends up vilifying a country and a people, and obscures the fact that the problem is related to some specific people and some specific problems. And that's my problem with using data, broad data, like Mexico is a dangerous place. Look how many murders occur there. What dot are we supposed to connect to that fact? Are we supposed to connect a dot that we shouldn't allow Mexicans coming in the United States? No, I don't think that's the right dot. Should we be connecting the dot that all Mexicans are criminals? No, that's not a correct dot. So I'm afraid that that's a fact out there. It's like a tree falls in the forest if no one's there. What? It's just a fact. And it's a fact that it's important in the question of law enforcement in Mexico. It's probably a question that's important with respect to enforcement at the border, with respect to checking trucks and otherwise trying to make sure that things moving across the border don't contain drugs. That's an important fact. But I'm just afraid the way we've used it in politics ends up obscuring the importance of that fact.
But Sandy, also to vilify a whole nation of people.
Right.
As if that's, you know, that's who these people are.
Yeah, I mean, I vacationed in Mexico a year ago and found it altogether safe. I did understand there were places to be concerned about.
As there are in America.
Yes.
Right. Got to go to a break, David. Thank you very much for the call. CJ, I see you and other callers. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
It's all about it.
Huh? Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. You know, you think back a song like that, 1965, and it still sounds good. Let's go. It's Friday. That's Fridays with Sandy Williams, my co-host. Let's go to CJ. Go ahead, CJ. Good morning.
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. Thanks for taking my call. Frustrating to listen to this show. It's like listening to this administration. We are less safe and less prosperous with a Democrat president and control.
What's frustrating, CJ, is to hear you call in, and we can play back. I don't care what the subject matter is, and you'll have the same verbiage every day. I don't care what the subject matter is, the Democratic this, Joe Biden that, you know. I mean, man, come on, man.
Oval Office, Earl.
What?
Yeah. Who's in the Oval Office?
Well, you know,
Democrat Joe Biden on day one shut down the construction of the wall. You know what? Finally pay per day still $3 million a day to not build the wall. We got $25 million worth of materials sitting there. We pay fines to those construction companies not to pay it. You know how much we paid? Almost $1 billion.
Let me ask you. So do you want to see a wall from I guess what, California all the way to Florida?
Legal immigration, not illegal, like your party believes in. Okay. The mere fact that this vice president has been designated as dealing with, they denied that there was a border issue. You know what? I'm going to use this source. Congressional Budget Office says it costs $10,000 in our infrastructure, schools, hospitals, per illegal. We've had 5 million illegal.
CJ, when did we get from the subject that we're talking about to the immigrants? You changed that. Not one other caller has changed that. They've all remained on the subject. You come in and change the whole conversation. We're not talking about what it costs for an immigrant child to go to school. We're talking about the fact that the United States Congress people were talking about sending the military in to Mexico to root out the drug lords. That's what the subject was about. You're nowhere near it.
Actually, CJ, let me just delve into one thing, though. We've got children in America. Would we rather have uneducated children in America who end up being a problem for the American economy and for the American society because they are uneducated? Or do we look at education as an investment, a community investment, in the improvement of the community by having as many people in the community as possible emerge into the economy fully educated and fully trained to participate in the economy in a way that is best for the economy as well as being best for them? I mean, isn't that the reason we educate one another and educate our children, is because we want our economy and our society to be filled with educated people? And so whether they're here illegally or not isn't dispositive of that question, because if they're here, they're going to emerge into our society, and don't we prefer and don't we invest in them because we want them to be fully trained? I mean, that's, when you look at it, step back, it's not, we're not doing it for them as much as we're doing it for all of us and them. Don't you look at education that way? Don't you want children in America to be educated generally? Let's just disregard,
no matter where they came from,
where they came from or how they happen to be here. But if they're here and if they're going to stay here, don't you prefer that they be educated?
They aren't our own.
Okay, I don't want to hear about the failure of our education system. I just want to understand whether you think that they ought to be educated.
They shouldn't be here illegally. And the mere fact that your end justifies your means.
No, I'm not justifying anything, and we aren't speaking from a party platform. We've been trying to talk about policy issues as we do every day, and you always want to reduce it to politics as if every day of every year we are in a political campaign where that was number one. I mean, the people in office now were elected to office, and they're going to be there until the end of the term of however long they're elected to that office. We continue to have policy issues. We continue on this show to talk about the ways in which we either agree or disagree with Joe Biden, for that matter. We've talked in many ways about ways that we've disagreed with him, particularly in foreign affairs. And so, you know, I think it's an insult, quite frankly, to the show and to the rest of the listeners, CJ, to try and reduce this show to a political debate day after day after day, and to recite talking points day after day after day. So that's my reaction, CJ. And I think I wish that you would call and talk about things that come
the subject that we're talking about.
The subject we're talking about, and to express some of your own thoughts that are not related to a political diatribe and a political contest between parties, and just talk about policies.
All right, got to go to the break. Thank you very much for the call. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Well, you know.
What a man.
A mighty good man.
A mighty good man.
This is Earl picks this music up.
Right, welcome back. Well, I was down this morning.
What a man.
I was down this morning, and yeah. I needed something to lift up, something to lift me up. All right, so welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show, as always. And by the way, I've been lifted up. Sun is shining, and doesn't look all as bad as it was when I got here.
Lively conversation.
Yeah, that's what it was, man. 3 o'clock in the morning, I was down in the dumps. But anyway, I saw all the snow outside. I didn't know how much. Didn't know what to expect. Anyway, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789, text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. Stephen, quickly.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, not everything has to be a political left and right debate. It really comes between right and wrong. And the difference between the two parties is what lessons we take away from right and wrong and how we go about learning from those things. And, you know, CJ, you know, calling in, I realize he doesn't have
to stand on. Yeah, so I just don't want to get into that.
But I also just wanted to mention, you know, the whole, you know, Mexican thing and the wall thing. A wall isn't the answer to our problems. Do I think that we need to make gains in how people are allowed in this country? Yeah, I think it's a shame that most Americans wouldn't be able to pass the test.
It's a shame that both parties can't work this out.
Well, ever
politically,
since
they should have been able to have this done.
George Bush II formed a foundation, a commission in 2003 or some such year, and it was bipartisan, and they spent a lot of time working on solutions, because even back at that point, we realized that our immigration policies were broken.
Right.
And that our procedures were inadequate. And, you know, now it's 20 years later, we still haven't been able to solve it.
Yeah, and so, that's really at the root of it.
Right.
The fact that our government is broken and it can't get that fixed. But anyway, I wanted to move on. Thank you very much, Stephen. I wanted to move on, Sandy, and, you know, we talk about China. We talk about Ukraine, and whether the American people want to talk about these things or not, Sandy, they're real. And at some point in time, be it either today, before we get into where it looks like we're headed, or we can wait until after we get there and then argue about what are we doing there, we need to talk about it before we get there. And so our nation continues to beat the war drum. And so the U.S. wants Europe to stand up to China. And the European nation is saying, hey, wait a minute. We don't have a problem with China. So, Sandy, how here we are, the United States of America, and we're telling our European partners how to think. And we don't see that as a problem, and we're trying to tell them who their enemies should be.
Well, you know, in a way, it's sort of like I think the psychologists call it narcissism. There's a complex that humans can have, and narcissists frequently end up doing something called gaslighting, where everything that goes wrong, they'll blame on the other person, and they'll blame them for what they're doing themselves. That's gaslighting. And I'm afraid that the American foreign policy is filled with gaslighting. You know, we are accusing the Chinese of aggressive conduct. And we acted like we were quite affronted by President Xi and then the defense minister last week of China talking about how it was that the United States was trying to contain China and was trying to marginalize us and unify other countries against China to try and marginalize them economically. And look what's happening. It's exactly what we're doing, exactly what they're saying we're doing. And when we're called on it, we say that's aggressive. You're being aggressive to accuse us of such things. And so I think the American public just needs to be more alert to what we're doing. We're asking, you know, first of all, the European Union is China's biggest trading partner. So they're going to be reluctant to get into a brouhaha with China, particularly over with trade sanctions, because the trade sanctions will bite themselves in the tail as well as China. And they'll be very reluctant to carry it out. Number two, you know, Henry Kissinger, when we opened up relations with China in 1971, Kissinger said at the time one of the reasons we were doing that is to make sure that China and the Soviet Union at that point, didn't form an alliance, which would be very difficult for the United States to deal with because of the great power that those two countries would have together. Well, what are we doing right now? We're driving these two countries together. They are not natural bedfellows, Russia and China. And yet we're driving them together with our conduct. And so, you know, I'm just afraid that, you know, instead of smoking the hive with at night, we're poking it with a stick during the day, and then we're accusing the hornets of doing nasty things.
You know, Sandy, what you just said hurts the American people from the standpoint, and it shouldn't, because it shouldn't be that you should be saying things as an American that maybe people don't totally agree with. I thought in this nation we have that right, okay? Mm-hmm. But yet we have people who are opposed to anybody who does independent thinking of what our government is saying. So there are people in the government who are clearly trying to gain as many allies as possible to be on their side against China. And these other people are saying, hey, we have no problem with China.
Well, for some reason, we're trying to divide the world up into people who do exactly what the United States wants them to do, and then everyone else, okay? And the everyone else are the people who are not on our side. And it's kind of either you're for us or you're against us. And
yeah, that's it.
Yeah, and that policy... I think I mentioned to you off the air, and I'll talk only briefly about it. I watched a movie. It was called Official Secrets, and it was about a kind of a horrible situation in which the United States was leaning on England to get English intelligence to try and create, and it's a true story, Elizabeth Gunn, who was a whistleblower, and the whistle she blew was about how the American government was leaning on England to try and dig up some dirty knowledge about the ambassadors to the UN of five different countries to try and force them to vote for the UN resolution supporting the war in Iraq so that so the war could start with the support of a unified UN resolution. And it was a demonstration of America's desire to use muscle of all kinds, you know, nefarious or not, to get its way to start a war that in retrospect was a horrible mistake and was not supported by any sort of intelligence that we were asserting at the time, which incidentally was viewed as faulty at the time.
You know, Sandy, here's what, to me, the danger lies. Democrats and Republicans can't agree on anything.
Except foreign policy.
Yes. But in this instance, they can both agree on isolating China and even making threats of some kind of military involvement. And maybe, look, you're a guy, Sandy, who clearly has studied and traveled and you know about these different nations and those kinds of things. I'm just a guy here in the city, but I see the same thing you see. The fact that because the American people don't see this as an important issue, and I understand, Sandy, what is it? The Grammys are going to be coming Sunday, getting ready for it, right? Got to make sure the Grammy party is set, and what are you going to wear? And we frivolous things in our country is, and there's nothing wrong with getting away from certain things, Sandy, but we've got to be able to look at something like this, which is, I don't know what, Sandy, could be more newsworthy than looking at three of the most powerful nations on earth. And we're at near war with two of them. I shouldn't say near war, but we're
We're definitely in sword rattling. We're in a sword rattling world. The Taiwan situation is a tinderbox, and Ukraine is more than a tinderbox. It's a live hot war that has lots of kind of threatening potential around the edge. So yeah, I don't think you're exaggerating at all, and I think that what we need to do as a people is we need to stand back and be able to at least examine ourselves and figure out what we're doing and how we're conducting ourselves. And what we really need that's keeping us from doing that is a news media that is alive and independent and active and not simply taking the government press releases and reprinting them, because that ends up being an awful lot like propaganda. If you have a government that's willing to put out press releases that aren't the whole truth and everything you need to know, you end up only knowing what the government wants you to know, okay? And I'm afraid that's what we've come to in this country. The New York Times, back in the period of Daniel Ellsworth and the Pentagon Papers, the Washington Post at the time in the 70s. The 70s were a period where our news media saved our country from a lot of serious issues and serious problems. And you know, what stopped the war in Vietnam? Probably the Pentagon Papers. And the realization that a newspaper as significant as the New York Times that would vet something like what Daniel Ellsworth put out created a lot of credibility for what was up to that point just a bunch of hippies complaining about a war.
You know, Sandy, you and I were both around during those times. And I don't know. Maybe people have too much to do today, and technology has been able to get them to escape from these things, because you really don't have to worry about the war or what's taking place there when you can, as I was saying, man, I've got, you know, access to I don't know how many different television stations and all those things, and man, I can run away from reality. But that doesn't mean reality is not still there.
Well, but we as citizens don't have the wherewithal to dig in and find out what the realities are out there in the world. You know, we have press releases issued to us by our government. We have press secretaries who, you know, you watch what's happened to the function of the presidential press secretary and you realize it's just a spin stuff day after day, no matter who's in office. And we have enough alumni. I mean, Chris Hedges is probably out there at the edge of the, but he's an alumnus of New York Times. There's a bunch of alumni of the various news media sources that used to be trusted, active news media sources who would spend money to dig up information to find out what was really going on, who are telling us that the media has stopped doing that, and we can tell that it stopped doing that. We no longer have a news media that's willing to roll up its sleeves, invest a bunch of money in news journalists who will dig into information, because quite frankly, these things are complicated, like I've always said, and we need people to help us understand them.
You know, Sandy, the U.S. is trying to charm and cajole Europe into linking arms to confront China. But Europe has other priorities in mind. Ahead of President Joe Biden's meeting with the European Union, it's just letting people know what's on the table. You don't have to spend a lot of time on this, but I think people should be made aware of how far we've gone down the road in this. And we want to, at least before you can't, before it's too late to turn around. Got to go to a break. We'll be right back.
Obscure that this is, I like it.
Yeah,
I don't know who it is.
Yeah, it's real nice. And so, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. It's Fridays with Sandy Wiz. Before we get off of China, Sandy, even though I know people have said, hurry up and get off of it, listen to this. Eyeing China, the Pentagon asked Congress to boost funds for Pacific Forces. Now, Sandy, boost funds for the Pentagon for Pacific Forces. Why? Well, why are we, after all these years, why are we outwardly saying give us more money for forces in the Pacific? What's going on over there that we need to shore up our forces?
Well, like I've said, it's the yin and yang thing. You know, the Pentagon will say it's because of the aggressive conduct of China in the South China Sea and the expansion of bases by China. Of course, China, on the other side of that, will say, we're doing this because of the frequent military exercises of the United States. It's because of their sword rattling and the arming of Taiwan.
But that's their backyard.
Taiwan's part of our country. You know, in fact, China just last week started talking about a peaceful unification process for Taiwan. And of course, the 1979 resolution we passed only said that we would assist Taiwan in the circumstance of an invasion, of a military intervention by China to try and change the status quo. And that status quo was a purposefully ambiguous, undefined status quo. So what China's basically saying is we're going to abide by the rules of law. We're going to work with Taiwan to see about whether we can't work out a peaceful unification process that brings them into the fold of China, much like a province, so that they would be more like Shanghai than they are like what they currently are today. We don't seem to have a lot of problem with Shanghai, and I'm not sure how many people on the island of Taiwan have a problem with being something closer to Shanghai. But we, the United States, want to stir this up, and we want to make sure that we continue to arm Taiwan, which of course creates this yin and yang process of military buildup.
So we want 15, or they want $15 billion next year, with another $72 billion spread over the next 4 years. To build up the forces. It's China's backyard, Sandy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the...
I mean, I don't see why people don't see that as an issue. If we're talking about building up the forces in our backyard, mm-hmm. I'm not going to argue with you on that. But well, you're halfway around the world.
Well, I mean, that's... I've talked about it before, this concept of hegemony, this notion of regional influence. It's the notion that Henry Kissinger operated on. It's the one that the neocons in the 1990s, with the fall of the Soviet Union and the lack of a powerful China, decided wasn't necessary anymore because we would have a Pax Americana. America would have a hegemony over the world. Well, We can't have hegemony over the world. We can't exert the power of a worldwide policeman. And we're going to have to revert to what has always been the case in foreign policy, which is recognizing areas of regional influence in various segments of the world. And China clearly is a powerful country that is entitled, essentially, to a region of influence because, quite frankly, logistically, there's no denying it. You know, we're not going to militarily resist China's exertion of a region of influence that is contiguous to and right in their backyard.
You know, Sandy, the other part of this is, and when we come back from the break, you know, this argument and this debate about China and all those things and Russia and Iran and North Korea, and this is why we need to spend more money. And then we've got the argument about the amount of money that Joe Biden wants to spend on so-called social programs that they want to cut.
Incidentally, right? I just read that today Saudi Arabia has renewed diplomatic relationships with Iran. Iran is beginning to fold back into relationships with the Arab countries and with the rest of the world. And I think everyone understands that isolation creates dangerous countries. When you de-isolate them and bring them into the world at large, it's a safer place. And here we are actively trying to isolate the two militarily strongest countries in the world.
You know, Sandy, and what the American people don't want to face or don't want to see is we're the aggressors. I don't care what people want to say, we're the aggressors. That doesn't mean we're anti-American. It doesn't mean any of those things. All you got to do is look. All you have to do is read.
Well, I would use the term provocateurs. You know, aggressive. Yes, I mean we have been aggressive. In you know, Iraq was surely an aggressive act. Afghanistan.
Well, you sanitized it, but.
Yeah,
yeah,
but I would say provocateur because, you know, because we were able, we weren't an aggressor in Ukraine, but we definitely might have been a provocateur in the way that we handled Ukraine with respect to NATO and the EU and the Maidan revolution in 2014 and our involvement there with covert and overt operations supporting the overthrow of the president of Ukraine at that time.
So when we come back, we want to get into the budget. The budget proposed by President Joe Biden. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.